Hi, Patrick Cox here with the World in Words podcast. Today, we have this.
اینجا تگزاس نیست.
Persian for this is not Texas. Here's something else that also isn't Texas. The haka, you know, that menacing, chanty, dancey thing that New Zealand's rugby team, the All Blacks, do before they kick off every match. That's a little later on in the podcast. But as we all know, Texas is number one in just about everything. So we have to start with that. And I wonder, did you see those stories recently about Norwegian, how the word Texas is an adjective in Norwegian? Well, Norwegian is just the start of it. I know this because Ashley Cleek got in touch with me after she saw the Norwegian story. She told me that Texas, as an idea, it sparks the imagination in other languages too. Here's Ashley.
In Norwegian, if you want to say something is totally out of control, you would say
Helt Texas.
Helt Texas.
It's like, this is completely Texas.
Emily Klovning is a student in her first semester at Columbia University in New York. She says Norwegians use the phrase completely Texas to describe a situation that's wild and chaotic, like a crazy soccer match or a party. Not in a negative way, just the opposite of normal life in Norway.
Where everything is very calm, people strive to like not get carried away. And if that ever happens, if something feels chaotic or if people are talking loudly, and then we'd say it's completely Texas.
Emily doesn't know how Texas came into Norwegian. Maybe it's from cowboy movies, or maybe the TV show Dallas that was insanely popular all over the world.
Tomorrow morning, the janitor's going to come in here and sweep you out with the rest of the trash. Unless, of course, you do the honorable thing. Get in the elevator, go up the roof, and jump off, huh?
But Texas, it's not just an adjective in Norwegian. The first time I noticed it was in Persian.
اینجا تگزاس نیست.
Or, it's not Texas here. That's my husband, Reza Jamiran. For him and other Iranians, Texas means
a place where there are no rules. It's chaotic there. A cowboy town. You could be dead anytime. You should be very careful. You should not mess with scary, dangerous people.
So, for example, if someone's driving erratically, you would say, "Inja Texas nist." It's not Texas here. Meaning, we have rules here, and you should follow them. If something violent happens in a neighborhood, Iranians might refer to that part of town as Texas. In Turkish, there's a similar phrase, Burası Texas değil, which means the exact same thing. It's not Texas here. While it's easier to notice this in foreign languages, it happens in English all the time, too. It's called metonymy, using a word as a symbol for a bigger idea. When I was a kid, my mom would drive my brother to a lacrosse game across town, and she would complain that she had to drive to Timbuktu and back. And I swear, for years, I thought Timbuktu was a suburb of Birmingham, Alabama. So why specifically Texas?
Texas is like the Uber United States.
Dr. Deborah Tannen is a linguistics professor at Georgetown University. She thinks Texas acts as a stand-in for an out-of-control place because it's famous all over the world and still so foreign.
And I think the more exotic the source, the more flexible its meaning would be. So Texas is so exotic to Persians or Norwegians.
So exotic that Texas can stand in for things that are totally unacceptable in those cultures. Reza, my husband, had another idea of how Texas became a staple in Persian.
Maybe this really famous cartoon also was Lucky Luke. Have you seen that one? He might be also from Texas.
I have never seen Lucky Luke. In fact, I doubt many Americans have. Lucky Luke was a comic strip written in French by a Belgian cartoonist way back in the 1940s. Lucky Luke's a good-natured cowboy who keeps the riffraff off the streets of his Texas town. The comic was super popular across Europe and the Middle East for decades. And in the 80s and 90s, Hanna-Barbera, you know, the producers of The Flintstones and The Jetsons, made an animated TV series. And that series was a centerpiece of my husband's weekend cartoon watching in Iran. We found the Persian language version on YouTube, just like he used to watch. Lucky Luke is riding his horse across a pretty basic backdrop, repeating cacti and a mesa. It's all desert and sand and saloon doors swinging. And this is what Reza figured Texas looked like, until we went there. We drove to Texas last year for a friend's wedding, Austin, to be specific. And of course, Reza didn't expect shootouts or bandits, but still.
I think I was a little bit surprised because, you know, it's something that, you know, you heard about it your whole life and then you're there, you know. It's surprising, certainly, but I wasn't nervous.
When we arrived, he called his mom in Tehran to say he was in Texas.
I wanted to see what's their reaction. Would they say, like, be careful?
She wasn't worried. I could hear her laugh through the phone, the same way my mom would probably laugh if I called her from Timbuktu.
Ashley Cleek. I think she should interview her husband every week. This music, by the way, is Persian, and yes, the refrain does go, Inja Texas Nist. This is not Texas. I love that story. Maybe because I've never been to Texas myself, so I have my own imagined sense of what it is, my own fantasy. And it's so good to hear someone else's. By the way, there's another story that another great reporter who I work with from time to time, Julia Barton, she did a few years ago about the TV series Dallas, how it's remembered, how people, not just Americans, but people all over the world, how they perceive Dallas as a result of the TV show and what it said to them about America. Julia did it for the radio show Studio 360. They podcast their show. I'll post a link to the story at pri.org/language. Well worth a listen. Okay, if you happen to be listening to this podcast pretty soon after we publish it, then the Rugby World Cup final will still be in the future. Saturday, October 31st. Halloween. Not that rugby fans care much about that. This World Cup final, which is between New Zealand and Australia, is expected to set a record TV audience around the globe. I'm not 100% about this, but I think it's the first time that network TV here in the United States is broadcasting it live. And similar major exposure is happening in other traditionally non-rugby playing nations, places like Brazil and India. Rugby is going global. All of which is to say that the ritual that takes place before the start of any match involving the All Blacks, the New Zealand national team, well, that is going to be a part of this World Cup final. So that means there's going to be a massive audience, probably the largest audience ever to see a haka. I think the haka is so well known now that I almost don't need to introduce it. But if you don't know what it is, it's often described as a war dance. The 15 New Zealand players, they stand in a formation and they perform this incredible set of movements full of aggressive, intimidating shouts and gestures and buggy-eyed stares. So, even if you don't care about rugby, I would recommend checking out the haka at the start of this World Cup final. But what exactly does haka mean? And where does it come from? It's a Maori expression, Maori, of course, being the predominant indigenous language of New Zealand. Haka is sometimes described as a ceremonial war dance, sometimes as an ancestral war cry, and sometimes it's just described as dance or even a challenge. It's got all of those elements. And in fact, what you see popularized on the rugby field, that's just a small piece of it. Here's Corey Baker to explain. He's a New Zealander, a ballet dancer, who also teaches haka.
Every haka is different. The one that the All Blacks and the one that we teach is the Kamati haka. So that's the most commonly known haka. It's about getting your team on side. There's a thing called waiwai takahia, which is the stomping of the feet. And this waiwai takahia is about bonding the group in a unified rhythm, but also shaking the earth for the opponents on the other side.
And then there are the facial expressions. They're highly stylized and exaggerated. To me, a non-expert, they kind of look like the Beijing opera in that exaggerated style. Baker says there's a Maori word for this, putonga.
In Māori culture, the more ugly you are, the more beautiful you are, which I find amazing. It's about the wide eyes and the tongue sticking out. That's all called putanga, and it's about really channeling, and it's an expression, but it's also from the soul and the heart. And, you know, like when I do a ballet or when I do a dance and you've got your showcase smile on, that's just completely different. I never put a putanga on. It comes from within.
So stylized, maybe, coming from a very real place. But what exactly is being expressed here? I don't know. Like I say, I'm not an expert. I'm even more ignorant on this than I am on most of the stuff I talk about in the podcast. And of course, I'm a complete outsider to the culture. But I began to understand just a little bit more about what the haka means after I heard about how it is viewed and used within Maori culture. Not at rugby matches, but just in Maori society in general. Maoris, like so many other indigenous minorities, many of them fail in the white man's world. They drop out of school, they commit crimes, go to prison, they become parents far too young, the whole depressing litany. But at least Maori culture is finally being valued. White New Zealanders have taken it to heart. And that's rubbed off. People are proud of the haka. And you could do stuff with that then. You can use it to intervene in people's messed up lives. That's what this Maori woman, her name is Annette, that's what she does. The haka she teaches has words. They all have words, but the lyrics to this one, they challenge, that word again, challenge. They challenge young Maoris to turn their lives around.
There you go, you just scatter your eggs wherever you want. Take no responsibility for them. Who's going to bring up your children? And that's what we're talking about, these fatherless generations now. The haka is the one item where we can discuss or challenge any social problems that are affecting us as Māori right now. These serious youth offenders that the courts are seeing every day, day after day, 80% of them have got no father figure. So they've been brought up just with a mum, or they've also got lack of education, poor education, they fall out of school early, they've got drug and alcohol problems. And so we talk about that in the haka. And it's the one place where we can be aggressive and we can say, hey, wake up. This is, you know, stop blaming the government, stop blaming social services, stop blaming poverty.
Okay, now I feel I have more of a sense of what the haka is, at least what it means today. Bring on the World Cup final. And that's it for this time. Thanks for listening. Please, if you can spare a couple of minutes, please review us on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever place delivers this podcast to you. That helps iTunes and Stitcher and the others. It helps them notice us. And that may put us a little bit more prominently in the shop window. We have pictures, video, all of that stuff from Texas, or rather from the imaginary Persian Texas. Go to pri.org/language for that. I might just have to embed a video there of J.R. Ewing and his bon mots. The laugh at the end of this zinger is worth another listen.
Tomorrow morning, the janitor's going to come in here and sweep you out with the rest of the trash. Unless, of course, you do the honorable thing. Get in the elevator, go up the roof, and jump off, huh?
Ah, pure genius. See you on Facebook at the World in Words page or on Twitter. The podcast is at LingoPod. And I'm at Patry Cox, PatriCox. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI. Oh.